Yeah, that was kind of deep, but you had to listen to the whole thing. You know, as addicts, we want to just jump on what we hear first and not listen to the whole story. So, anyway, I'd like to thank everyone that read. And my name is Hubert. I'm still an addict.
How are you?
And for my first speaker, we will have Pauline S. from the Central Maryland area.
Thank you.
I'm Pauline, and I'm an addict. I noticed during the reading, when we get to the part where we say, one is too many and a thousand is never enough, we put great emphasis on this. I noticed that it's popular to put the emphasis on a thousand never enough. And I want to talk about that for just a second. The emphasis is on one is too many. And the thousand part is of the ego. The one is too many is of humility, the humble heart. I know that I can't have just one. So I just encourage you to strive for, don't do one. The thousand will never make a difference, right? So I also want to welcome, I see a lot of young people in here today. Rock on, man. Welcome. Welcome to NA. I got clean when I was 20 and a half years old, 31 years ago. That's right. I got 11. I have 11,604 days clean, and I'm proud of 11,603 of them. I don't know which one I'm not proud of, but don't want to take credit for all of them, but you know, when I got clean at 20 and a half years old, I was a bundle of nervous energy. I was too inexperienced at life. I just mean the big picture life, to have any self-esteem or any wisdom. I really just didn't. So the beauty of Narcotics Anonymous, and I came in at a time where I had to go to a couple AA meetings a week. And when I came off a 3-year run of smoking PCP, whatever you called it in your neighborhood, but I'm from Glen Burnie and we called it green. So, you know, I had smoked a lot of green and I had like very few brain cells to work with. I very rarely ever raised my hand, and I went to an AA meeting one night and some codger called on me and I introduced myself as a drug addict. It was 1982, and some other old codger said something, you know, mean-spirited, like, I probably spilled more than you drank, and, you know, I had to tell him, because you're a slob. And it was, from that point, my mission to not have to go there, ever, you know, anymore. So I became a pioneer in Narcotics Anonymous, I started a couple meetings, but you know, I just helped in that capacity to get the foundation of NA growing. But the thing was, like, I had I relapsed a bunch in the beginning for like 4 months or so, and then finally had that moment of truth where after this last time using, when I had said no to the lines on the mirror for 20 times, I finally said, well, okay, what can one hurt? See, there's that one thing. What can one hurt? And at 3 in the morning when I finally got home, and I was just curled up in a ball on my bed rocking and saying to myself, like, nobody understands the way I feel, which was a total lie. I mean, I've been going to a meeting a week. I should have known, a meeting a week, smoking green, a meeting a week, like that, there was no equation there, it didn't even count. And I heard, you know, I mean, I could tell in your empathy that you understood, but my disease was active, and it would tell me otherwise. So at that point, I made the decision that I would do what they, you know, the bargaining chip that they said, you know, try our program for 90 days, and if you don't like it, your misery will be refunded with interest. And which was was cute. I heard a couple chuckles just now, like the with interest part. Oh, that's funny. But the truth of the matter is the disease continues to progress, does push-ups while I'm standing here, 31 years clean. I am scared pissless at what would happen if I let my guard down, honestly. So, came in young, had a bunch of energy. Not much brain capacity, but a bunch of energy. So I joined like 5 subcommittees. So we're talking about filling the void. That's what we're talking about here. So the first void that I recognized was the absence of getting, using, and finding ways and means to get more. There was clearly an absence there. What was I going to do with these other 16 hours of the day when I wasn't actually at work? And then again, there was the lunch break at work. So I actually took a regular lunch break and ate food, drank beverage. That was, my lunch break from that point on. But anyway, I had all this time and a lot of energy. What was I going to do? Yeah, so that's what I did. I joined, and this is really funny to me, I joined the newsletter staff, which, I could barely finish a sentence. And for those of you who are old enough to remember Welcome Back, Cotter, I was sort of like the Vinnie Barbarino in the crowd, because I could be like, what? I barely finished a sentence. So I joined the newsletter staff. I joined public information. God knows what I did there. I can't even remember. I made coffee 3 nights a week at meetings. And around 4 months clean, I became a treasurer. It's all crazy to me now. But anyway, I was busy. And the newsletter staff, they gave me an assignment to collect clean time. Like, that was my job, was to go out into the community, to attend as many meetings as I could, and come back with all of the celebrations that were coming up in the next month. And believe me, I enjoyed that. And that's how people got to know me, and I got to know people. I'd always raise my hand at every meeting and ask for announcements and anniversaries. So by the time that I reached 5 years clean, I had worked the first 7 steps, 8. There was a pause in there. When I was 9 months clean, my sponsor delivered a baby. How dare she, And she was suddenly very unavailable. So I had to find another sponsor. So I went 3 months without one. But with all the service work I was doing, what I ended up with, right? For some of you who have a similar experience, I ended up with a really good service resume, but my step work had ceased at that point until I got another sponsor, which was like 3 months later. And then I got to, resume, but by then I was on step 6 and batshit crazy anyway. And for those, anybody do the 6th step in this room?
Yeah.
Batshit crazy? Oh, the rest of y'all got something to look forward to. It's like personal entertainment that you wish you didn't pay for. Talk about low self-esteem. I have this void, and I came from a family. My father was an alcoholic. My mother's like a church-going, didn't drink, didn't curse. And they were... oil and water. There was nothing that meshed between them. There was always chaos in the house, a lot of screaming. I just didn't get my needs met as far as nurturing goes. And the one thing that I clearly remember from my childhood is feeling extremely different, is although you can't tell because of this great keratin treatment that I get on my hair, I was this adorable natural blonde with all of these curls. I'm left-handed. I barely look like any of my siblings. So people would tease me that I was the milkman's child. So that kind of dates me, for those of you who had a milkman, I felt really different, and especially being left-handed in a family full of brunettes that were right-handed with straight hair. So feeling different and not being nurtured and guided, I was left to make a lot of decisions for myself. And I made some bad ones. you know, based on what was going on in between my ears. And so I came to Narcotics Anonymous with low self-esteem and a lot of experiences to validate that. You know, like, and it wasn't until I actually wrote my fourth step, and particularly the second time that I wrote it. The first one time I wrote it, I was, you know, I was like 6 months clean, and not, with very little capacity, but my sponsor gave me page 64 of the AA Big Book and said, follow these instructions, and after you're done, I'll feed you dinner, and we'll go over it together. And, you know, it was just anger, fear, resentment, the basics. So after I wrote that little, you know, as much as I could come up with in that hour or two setting, and then we ate and we talked about it. You know, sponsors are tricky. She says, come on over to my house for dinner, you know. I get there, she hands me this book and says, I'll feed you later, you know. Thanks. But anyway, afterwards I asked her, I said, what made you think that I was ready for this? And she said, because every time we talk on the phone, the things that would come out of your mouth were just anger and resentment. And the fear is underlying all of that stuff. So as I told my story, disclosed the history of Pauline in truth, in fact, you know, there's layers of perception in there, but there are a lot of truth in there. Like when I was 17, I faked a pregnancy so that I wouldn't lose this boyfriend. And I know none of you good people ever did that, women or men. I don't know, whatever he floats your boat. But I'm assuming that the women around here might have tried that trick. But, you know, the void that I had at that point was I didn't think I could stand being alone, because the voices of despair were getting louder. The older I got and the deeper I got into my addiction, the despair grew louder. And my, you know, all I really wanted to do was shut it down and shut the voices off. And they're my own voice. But it seemed like someone else was taking up residency up there. Some days it still seems like that. But I, you know, so looking at the facts, these are some of the things that I did to fill that void. You know, stealing to fill the void. Lying about simple things like making junior varsity basketball. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but without these heels on, I'm really only 5'1". But I wanted to belong to a group so bad. I wanted to stop feeling like the curly left-handed chick that didn't look like her siblings. Now, the truth of the matter is, my eyes matched theirs, but the rest of me didn't. And you know, I played with that for years. But these are the things that I did in my addiction to fill the void. And then I get clean, and I'm tasked with a really tall order, and that is to know myself. And still, I stand here today, 31 years clean, and I can say, I know myself pretty well. But I still am able to uncover beliefs that are operating below the conscious level that dictate my decisions. And I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, right before my grandmother went into an Alzheimer's dementia unit to be cared for properly, my aunt said, oh my God, I can't maintain my life and her life. I need some help. And I said, oh, well, great. I'll go hang out with Grandma and clean her house once a month. I could do that. Good God. And I started to calculate in my mind who else of my cousins I could invite into the endeavor, you know, because I got plenty of cousins. And immediately I ruled out all the male cousins, and I just was focusing on I was going to recruit the female cousins to come on this venture. Just because I was on board, I'm going to pull everybody else in, because I'm a very inclusive kind of gal. But it's, you know, anyway, but did you notice that I removed the male cousins? Took them right out of the equation. And why did I do that? Because there was a belief operating below my conscious level that I couldn't count on the men to show up. That's really sad. It's been a true experience in a couple of, you know, in my relationship with my dad, Of course, because he's an alcoholic. You know, he promised all the time, of course I'll take you tomorrow. And yes, we'll go out on the rowboat. Or, yeah, we'll go out on the pier and catch crabs. And, you know, I'd sit on the steps, eager, waiting. You know, so I had formed this belief that was, you know, influencing my decisions and not even aware of it. Just a couple years ago, I uncovered that one. So I'm here to say the journey just continues and continues. And so my quest is to know myself so that the void gets smaller. I'm not trying to fill it with everything because I understand it a lot better. So here are some of my Achilles heels that I've uncovered over the years. My major one that's gotten me in the most trouble is I'm allergic to loneliness. Oh, I got some people relating in the audience. So picture this, right? I have, you know, have had a couple boyfriends, and I've broken up with them boyfriends, and then I've invited them back because I couldn't. Now, here's the thing. My instincts and intellect were operating fully when I said, this isn't really working. Right? So that's what was happening. And then just a little while after that, really?
Mm-hmm. 25 minutes.
Wow, we didn't start. Wow. I'm in denial about the time. Does anybody agree with me? We got until 1:15, Hubert. I think you're a little jumping the gun there, hon. I'm not done telling my story. I know. I'm ready. All right. So, anyway, I'm rebellious and contentious. Can you tell? A little bit. Actually, that's I'm contentious. It's true. So, intellect is operating when I say this isn't working for me. And then, I don't know if any of you had this experience, but then a couple of days or a week later, I start to feel that loneliness, and the feeling tells my intellect that I have made a mistake. And you know that expression that we say about, you know, drugs, especially in early recovery, if you don't pick it up, it won't get in you. Well, it applies to relationships too. So, don't pick up the phone, and you won't have to, you know, anyway. So I've had relationship relapse in my history as a direct result of filling that void. Okay, so I could talk about all the misfortune that I've had, and then so you get the picture. Feelings, bad decisions, it's all about I want to feel something different than what I'm feeling right now. And so I end up at the 10th step, which almost always brings me back to 7. Almost always. You know, I have to look, if I'm doing step 10 and I'm inventorying my decisions, my feelings, the way I behaved, then usually there's some other work to do in step 7. Some surrender, humility, you know, coming clean with myself, bash the denial. I love denial, by the way. It has served me well for many years. Doesn't serve me well every time. But it's been positive a couple of times. Anyhow. And then there's the 11th step, and that's really where I want to focus my attention. Sometime about 8 years ago, I decided, all right, here's the other way that I like to fill the void is with activity. And you guys, people, are the activity. You know, like a friend of mine and I, you know, we take dance lessons and do all kind of activities. Sometimes that's at the detriment of me taking care of my business, because I really don't like to take care of my business. I mean, I do on the one hand because I like nice things, but on the other hand, like, really, I want to play. I want to socialize and play. That's what I want to do. So that's one of the other ways I fill the void, is I procrastinate over here by socializing over here. So I a couple winters ago, I decided that I was going to really scale back my socializing and replace it instead with a closer relationship with the God of my understanding. And you will hear me often say, Goddess. Do whatever you want with that. So I did. I didn't detach completely, but I really limited my social activities so that I could spend more time in prayer and meditation. And I want to tell you what happened was so great. Not only did I increase my capacity to meditate, you know, from maybe 30 seconds to 5 minutes, and then sometimes more than that, 15 sometimes, where I'm actually, you know, feeling pretty focused and don't stray too far. I'm able to bring myself back to center. This is a real discipline. It's not easy. Even for me today, it's not easy. I have to set the time aside and work on it. But besides that, the byproduct of building that better relationship with Goddess was it brought a really great relationship with self. Like I hear people say this, and now I understand it. I really grew to love myself at a deeper, deeper level by not avoiding myself, not avoiding those feelings. And the only thing I could tell you is the way through it is through it, not over or around. And that 11th step, It made the whole difference between whether I'm going to reach for something that's gratifying or reach for something that's satisfying. And now I have something in my life that's satisfying. I like a little gratification still. Who doesn't? But I don't live for it, you know, and it doesn't run my existence. So I want to thank you for coming at this late hour and listening. And I'm done. Can I make my 5 minutes?